This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What the reverends here, the bishops, were saying is that the situation that they saw in Gaza is similar to what South Africa experienced under apartheid, where they were restricted in their movement, they were restricted in their rights, they were not allowed to do certain things that white people were allowed to do.
That was reporter Tuso Kumalo on the press briefing South African church leaders gave in Johannesburg after their visit to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Details coming up also. At least 40 people have died in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo after heavy downpours unleashed floods and landslides. And the leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, visited Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, today. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Today, South African church leaders briefed the media at O.R. Tambo International Airport after visiting Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Bethlehem, and the Rafah Gate. Our reporter, Tuso Kumalo, was at the briefing. He talked to me earlier from Johannesburg regarding the press conference. He started by explaining who the church leaders were and what their mission entailed.
This was a delegation of about 19 church leaders which joined other Christian leaders across the world. They are saying their mission there in Palestine was to be there with the Palestinians, especially over Christmas, to hear their stories and also to experience what they're experiencing during this time when different areas in Palestine are being bombarded by the Israeli forces. Their message really was they saw a lot of suffering with these people that have lost their relatives, some relatives still under rubbles. And of course, they said the other thing that they saw, their movement is very much restricted, which of course, Reverend Chikane, who is the leader of the delegation, likened it to what South Africa experienced here under apartheid, saying that must stop. They need to stop the war so that the people of Palestine can also have the independence that South Africa has.
So, Tuso, these church leaders actually went to Jerusalem as well as to Tel Aviv, the Rafah Gate and Bethlehem. Did they meet any officials from Gaza or did they meet any officials from the Israeli government?
According to them, they only met civil society organizations. They also said they met some relatives of the people that were taken hostage by Hamas fighters when they attacked people in Israel on the 7th of October. And in these meetings, this is where they got all the sides, the concerns of those families who still need their relatives who were taken hostage to be released, and they need that to be facilitated in a peaceful situation. And also on the other side, the Palestinians that are calling for peace to prevail so that at least they can also continue to live with their lives. So they did not meet the hostages, they did not meet government officials from both sides, but met different organizations that shared them their stories.
And too, so South Africa seems to understand the pain of the Palestinians more so than other countries. Why is that?
From what the reverends here, the bishops, were saying is that the situation that they saw in Gaza is similar to what South Africa experienced under apartheid, where they were restricted in their movement, they were restricted in their rights, they were not allowed to do certain things that white people were allowed to do. And this is the general feeling of South Africans to say what we call the occupation of the Palestinian areas is exactly what they experienced in South Africa. So according to them, they share quite a lot of similarities in terms of the rights restrictions and, of course, the arrests and other things that are happening to the people in Palestine. So when they look into that situation, in most cases, you talk to South Africans, you talk to the leaders of the churches that we're speaking to today, they are saying those are situations that cannot be allowed to continue. they are saying there is need to have this two-state solution where the Palestinians are also having independence and be in charge of themselves, and the Israel too is in charge of Israel in Israel, so that there is peace between the two nations.
That was reporter Tuso Kumalo. He talked to me from Johannesburg. The leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, visited Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, today in the second leg of a rare publicly announced foreign tour. On Wednesday, Dagalo met Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni at his country home. It was his first confirmed appearance outside of Sudan since the war between RSF and the Sudanese army broke out in mid-April. Reuters News says Ethiopia's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Demeke Mekonnen met Dagalo at Ethiopia's Bole International Airport today. Posts on the social media platform X show the RSF leader arriving in an aircraft belonging to a United Arab Emirates airline. Reuters notes that last month, a top Sudanese general accused the UAE of backing the RSF's war effort, funneling supplies through countries including Uganda. The UAE denied the charges. The UN support mission in Libya, UNSMIL, stressed the need for the actors in the Libyan crisis to agree on a clear electoral path and a timetable for the election and to reach a consensus on forming a new unified government that will guide the country towards elections, stressing that delaying action will deepen the division and expose Libya to various threats that threaten the lives of people in Libya and undermine regional stability. Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed the statement with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
This certainly needs to be seen in connection with the five-party talks intended by UN SRPTE. He wants to launch talks with the Presidential Council, Prime Minister Dabeiba, the commander of the Libyan National Army, Khalifa Haftar, and the chairs of both rival parliaments, HOR and HCS. But Prime Minister Dabeiba said he will participate, but only under the condition that this is not about a new interim government and that the elections will be run only after there is a new permanent constitution. And such a permanent constitution is certainly not even on the horizon. The chair of the House of Representatives said, on the other side, he will not participate if Dabeiba participates, as the HOR has withdrawn the confidence from the Dabeiba government. And he said, if he participates without Dabeiba, he will only discuss about the implementation of the controversial election laws, which foresee as a first step a new interim government without Dabeiba. Khalifa Haftar said he will only participate if the prime minister appointed by the House of Representatives, Osama Hamad, will be also allowed to sit on the table. So altogether, I would say the prospects for a success of the current UN initiative are not existing.
The UNSMIL statement said Libyan people are watching with growing frustration, and efforts to hold elections over the past 2 years have been marked by open-ended negotiations, procrastinations, and questionable intent, despite repeated calls from the UN Security Council on the need to reach a compromise. What are the prospects of reaching a compromise between Libyan rivals?
Well, I would say even outside of the Fatih initiative, there is no serious interest on any side of the main actors to find such a compromise and to go forward to elections. All of them can live with the current situation very well, and most of them would not be in their position anymore after elections. So no one of the Presidential Council has any realistic chance to continue his political career after the elections. Most members of the rival parliaments would certainly have no chance to get re-elected. Prime Minister Dabeiba wants only to have elections under his conditions so that he is certainly re-elected. And he uses his current role to further the influence of his own clan. And this leads even increasingly to conflicts in his hometown Misrata. In the east, Khalifa Haftar, the LNA commander, forces the grip of his family on the areas controlled by the Libyan National Army. Just last Wednesday, his son, engineer Belkacem Haftar, was appointed executive director of the Turner Reconstruction Fund, which oversees billions of Libyan dinar for the reconstruction of the destroyed areas in the east. However, From my point, not only the winners of the current situation are clear, but also the losers, and those are the Libyan people. The National Institution for Human Rights in Libya said recently that the poverty rate has risen to 40% during the last year. So it is quite clear. Libya is slowly gliding down into even more chaos, but it seems to be no one cares.
So how do you explain the lack of interest that the international community shows in facilitating a Libyan political solution, or at least stand united in word and deed and urge Libyan stakeholders choose the path to peace, unity, and democracy?
I would say there are two important points for this. The first one is that with the exception of Turkey and maybe Egypt, the influence of the international community is very, very limited. And Egypt and Turkey consider their national interests are currently not seriously threatened by the situation in Libya as it is right now. Secondly, the international interests on Libya has significantly cooled down, especially with regard to economy, with regard to investments. There is no legal certainty. Even recent contacts between Libya's National Oil Corporation and international oil majors like Eni, Total Energy and ADNOC from the Emirates are challenged. Furthermore, Libya is not honoring its financial commitments. And well known, the security situation in Libya is still very much fragile. Actually, I expect more that some of the remaining companies still active in Libya will withdraw from Libya. The world is not Libya-centric. And yes, there are security concerns, of course, with regard to terrorism and in Europe also with regard to migration. But those are dealt with through the current structures, through the Dabeiba government and through LNA Commander Haftar.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You are listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhibi in Washington. Check us out on voaafrica.com. And now for some seasonal greetings from VOA listeners.
Mr. Lukbu, to all VOA listeners all over the world, Africa, VOA African Service in the morning, I wish you happy Selogbe days from Innocent Oluku from Nigeria, Edo Delta. I wish you, everyone, all VOA listeners, happy 2024 with prosperity and good health.
Hello, VOA. I'm Thomas Kunside in South Sudan, Jonglei State, Banga County. I'm hereby to send my best regards to my children who are currently living in Uganda. Happy Merry Christmas and Happy New Year of 2024 to you. The year of 2024, I wish it will be the year of peace in South Sudan for the willing of the God. Thank you.
And Chukwansi Anso from Asaba in Delta State, Nigeria, wrote to us with both greetings and some suggestions. Here's what he had to say. Hearty congratulations to you guys at VOA News English to Africa crew for your great and immense achievements in the world of news broadcasting and informative programs. I've been listening to via radio shortwave frequency as far back as 1994, but at the moment I'm listening via TuneIn online app thanks to technology. I can confidently listen at my convenient time, on your daily podcast. My favorite news memories are that of South Sudan independence, Arab Spring uprising, and Libya civil unrest. However, I did observe you guys report more news about East Africa than West Africa. Also, I would want your news crew to beam your investigative eyes on the ongoing presidential election petition tribunal in Nigeria. The entire world is watching. VOA News English to Africa should as well be watching. Thank you for your message and your suggestions. If you want to share New Year's greetings, you can send a message or text via this WhatsApp number, +1202-258-3076. Once again, +1202-258-3076. We'd love to hear from you. The famous South African playwright, producer, and composer Mbongeni Ngema has died in a car crash at the age of 68. His family said in a statement that Ngema was killed in a head-on car accident while returning from a funeral in the Eastern Cape. The celebrated playwright was a passenger in the vehicle involved in the crash. He was best known for creating the hit Sarafina play, which premiered on Broadway in 1988. It was adapted into a musical drama starring Whoopi Goldberg in 1992, becoming an international success, and was nominated for the Tony and Grammy Awards. Sarafina told the story of a young student and how she inspired her peers to fight against racial segregation in apartheid South Africa after her teacher was thrown in jail. Apartheid discriminated against non-whites and ensured South Africa was ruled by the minority white population from 1948 till the early 1990s. Ngema's body of work include the lauded theater production Woza Albert, which first showed in 1981 and went on to win more than 20 awards across the world. The political satire explored the second coming of Jesus Christ as a black man who returned to South Africa. Tributes to the noted playwright have been pouring in. The ANC said South Africa has lost a true legend and a genuine ambassador of the theater. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa also praised the late Ngema today. While geopolitical tensions between Beijing and Washington were high this year, Chinese students and migrants are still coming to the United States, with more crossing the border than ever before. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more on what the environment in the U.S. was like in 2023 for the Chinese who are living here.
From Chinese groceries to Chinese restaurants, immigrants from China can find more comforts of home in the U.S. than ever before. This year, the U.S. celebrated the 80th anniversary of the repeal of the Chinese Exclusion Act, a law that banned Chinese laborers from immigrating to America. Here's U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai.
And we honor those who fought so hard to repeal that law.
Now, U.S. universities are top destinations for Chinese students, and a new wave of migration is happening at the U.S. southern border. Chinese migrants fly to Ecuador, then travel by foot, boat, and bus through South and Central America to the U.S.-Mexico border. Xinjiang survived the dangerous journey with his family and spoke to VOA earlier this year. He's using a pseudonym because he fears retaliation from the Chinese government.
All Chinese people know our Chinese government is too powerful and too controlling.
There has been a sharp increase of these crossings from just over 2,000 in fiscal year 2022 to more than 24,000 this fiscal year. Madeline Su is an immigration and Asian American studies professor at the University of Maryland.
People in China are very frustrated. They see lack of opportunity. They see the Chinese economy stagnating. There's also been a lot of frustration with how controlling the Chinese government is, how many restrictions there are on their lives.
Many Chinese migrants arrive seeking political asylum in a country where Asians are the fastest growing racial or ethnic group. One of the largest within this group, the more than 5 million people of Chinese origin living here. Asian Americans are reporting acts of hate within the country. Manju Kokarni is one of the founders of the organization Stop AAPI Hate.
The most prevalent types of hate are harassment. That makes up roughly 88% of those reported to us. And this is most often verbal harassment.
There are new controversial restrictions in Florida this year that ban citizens from China and other U.S. adversary countries from purchasing property, and prohibit universities within the state from accepting money and partnering with China and other nations labeled as a foreign country of concern. With U.S.-China tensions playing out locally, in some cases, Chinese immigrants are no longer seen as a bridge between the two countries.
Immigrant Chinese Americans are facing a lot of pressure, not just in the United States, but there has also been a lot of pressure in China as not being sufficiently patriotic or nationalistic to China. And so they have more and more found themselves in this really hard place.
But not every Chinese has had a difficult time. International student Shan Zhang from China says Americans have welcomed him.
All my friends I made because like college is really an inclusive environment. A lot of students are Asian.
Students like Zhang and migrants alike say they would like to find work in the U.S. and stay in hopes of a better future. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
And at least 40 people have died in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, local authorities said, after heavy downpours overnight unleashed floods and landslides that left residents digging through the mud to find bodies. At least 20 people died in Bukavu, and at least 20 more were killed in a village in Buroni village, according to officials in the two places. Reporter Zanem Netizaidi traveled to the disaster zone and spoke with people there. Jean Malenga escaped and is helping search for others. He says they heard the walls collapse and bury about four people. He says two bodies were found quickly and two others were found later. Malenga says they don't have help and are continuing the search on their own. Pauline Kalsi is grieving the loss of family members. He says they waited for the flooding to ease so they could escape, but five members of his family died, his older brother, his wife, and three children. Gaston Wamunde is a representative of the provincial governor. Wamunde says there is joint responsibility for the tragedy. He says people should not build on unsafe sites and the deaths could have been avoided. Poor urban planning and weak infrastructure in many DRC communities make them vulnerable to extreme rainfall. United Nations climate experts warn rains are becoming more intense and frequent in Africa due to warming temperatures. And the death toll from an oil tanker explosion in central Liberia has risen to more than 40. The French news agency AFP says the tanker carrying gasoline crashed and tipped into a ditch along a road in Totaota, about 130 kilometers from the capital Monrovia on Tuesday. President George Weah sent his profound sympathy to the families of the victims. A statement by the office of the president said that some residents in the area attempted to scoop up the contents of the trapped tanker when the explosion happened. Dozens were badly burned and taken to the hospital. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Saeed Hamdoun, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM stations.